Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, me and comedian Greg Proops talk about being quarantined.
The news that we're getting, the numbers that we're seeing, the things that we hear are week to 2 weeks old because we're so far behind testing and actually knowing the extent of it. Be patient, stay confined. If it takes 6 months, it takes 6 months.
Today on the show, comedian Greg Proops and I talk about what we're doing while we're quarantined. Stay close.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Greg Proops, in quarantine. And you're listening to Storyworthy. Grr.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. This is very exciting because I am on my very first Zoom conference, and I picked one of my favorite people in the world, Greg Proops, to join me. Hi, Greg Proops.
Hi, Christine Blackburn. How are you?
I'm good. This is a bizarre time indeed. No doubt about that. Now, last week on Storyworthy, we had comedian Samson McCormick. And Samson was talking about his favorite teacher that he ever had. And she was a teacher from second grade. And anyway, but he was my last guest in person. We recorded like 2 weeks ago when it wasn't like this complete lockdown.
Right.
And anyway, go back, you guys. Listen to Samson McCormick. He is a charming guy, and it's a charming story. So go back and listen to that. But not right now, because as you know, we're here with Greg Proops. Greg Proops, man, this is – I'd just like to hear your take on it, because I think about people like you who, like, performing live is your bread and butter. That's like – I mean, you do your podcast, of course, with Jennifer, but – you know, you do a lot of touring around the entire world, and now everything is halted.
I know, right? I'm usually on the road, Christine, a couple hundred days a year. I'm home very rarely.
That's a lot.
It is. And last year we did, as going all over the United States and Canada, we did almost every state except Wyoming and Louisiana, I think, and Mississippi and Hawaii. We went to Alaska. And then we did a gig in New Hampshire. It was so close to Maine that we drove over the bridge to Maine just so we could say we went to Maine. And we had a gig in Maine scheduled this year. And then Jennifer and I went to Tokyo, Glasgow, Dublin, and London with the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it kind of cut the heart out of me for, you know, the first couple of days until I got over myself and realized that other people have much more difficult circumstances. Conditionally, it ruins my business because my business is touring.
I know. Did you catch yourself at home when you realized I got to stop, or were you somewhere else and said, I got to go home?
We went out, and I'm almost ashamed to say this. We were continued touring. The last live gig we did was March 8th in Washington State in a town called Anacortes up near the Canadian border. And it's a beautiful town, and the seafood is to die for. It's kind of a fishing town. There's a giant shipbuilding yard there, which is very spooky. And I always go over to it and take pictures because there's ships. And then there was this weird government ship that was all covered up. And I was like, what are they doing in there? And heaven knows what they were. We played Seattle at the Moore Theater on the 6th. And there was 1,500 people in. So I don't know if I'm COVID Mary or not, but I seem to have survived through that. But I'm
2 weeks out. So,
yeah, I just feel bad that we put that many people in a room in Seattle, you know. Because it was breaking out already big time there. And in any case, to make a long tragic story less tragic, we were on the road to go to, I'm not kidding, San Diego. We were going to play Lancaster, which is out in the desert. I don't know for your listeners. It's in the hot, what they call the high desert out here, which is where there's tumbleweeds and Joshua trees and whatnot.
Same altitude, or the same, what would you say, latitude as Palm Springs.
Exactly. People from Los Angeles often go to Palm Springs and Big Bear to cool it, but no one goes to Lancaster because there's nothing in Lancaster except methamphetamine. And so we were going to go play there, and I hadn't been in years, and I went to kindergarten and part of first grade in Lancaster so long ago that there's an Air Force base out there. I remember playing outside and there would be sonic booms because they were running test aircraft all the time. This is the early 60s. Yeah. So you'd be outside and you'd hear boom and the sky would shake. And it was because they'd achieved Mach 1. When you reach Mach 1 in an aircraft, the air folds in behind it.
Yeah.
And my dad was a bartender at a place called the Caravan Inn in Lancaster. And a pilot used to come in named Al White, who sadly passed away in a test accident. But he was a hero. And he gave me this model of his test aircraft, which was called the XB-70. And it looked like the Concorde. It had a nose that dipped down. And I was telling my wife about it the other day because I still have a tie tack and some playing cards of it. I remember loving the model when I was little because this was when we were going to go to the moon and all this. And it was very important to be an astronaut and a test pilot in the early.
That was a mean looking aircraft where the nose goes down almost like an eagle. You know, it was like very.
A single, you know, just one big wing and then a little. And I assume that the cockpit was this bloody big, you know, in those days.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's probably two pilots, but still.
So we were on our way to Lancaster. We were on our way to San Diego, and we picked up Ryan Stiles, who's the star of our group. And
in Orange County then?
He flew down. He lives in Bellingham, Washington.
I see.
And, which is a lovely little boutique-y place.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, oh, my goodness. Bellingham is like white people paradise. It's like bike paths and 17,000 bookstores and coffee shops and legal weed and it's on the sea and there's orcas and
When I was a flight attendant, I would fly to Seattle and I would have like these 29-hour layovers and I would take the boat. You take a boat, like a little ferry, over to Bellingham. And you were like transformed into a different world. I mean, it's just completely like it's just its own place. You know, it's like you're on a movie set in a way. It's like a Truman Show thing.
Totally. And we used to stay at a hotel there that was on a bike path. So when you went out the door of the hotel, to the right of you was a little mall with a coffee place and a bookstore. And to the left of you was the hiking path. And if you took that, you could kind of hike all the way around to the backside of town and whatnot. It is like a movie set. It's like, what's that movie with an Earl Hamner Twilight Zone episode where all of a sudden you meet relatives?
You guys pick up Ryan and you head out to the desert.
On the day, you know, I said to our road manager, Morgan, I go, I have a feeling that we're not doing any of these gigs this weekend. We had four gigs. And he goes, I know, but we've got to give it a try. And we haven't heard from the venues yet. And, you know, So by 11 o'clock, Lancaster, the mayor of Lancaster, who, by the way, is a very prescient and enlightened mayor, he shut the town down immediately and ordered thousands of masks and respirators and whatnot and got them. And he was on TV the other day. I saw him saying, I don't know how we're a medium-sized town, how we can do this and other people can't. Yeah. He Facebooked that there would be no events in Lancaster. So we were informed by our agent while we were in the car. And then we went to pick up Ryan. And then another gig fell on us then. And then another gig. And then by lunchtime, they had all canceled. So we had all got it up at 8 in the morning to get in the van because we were going to drive to all these gigs because they were all Southern California gigs. And so we went to a restaurant in San Diego and had lunch and then picked up Ryan. And then on the way back in the van, we were driving him back to L.A. so he could fly out of LAX the next day.
Yeah.
And by the way, he said he flew down with the blanket over his head.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Me and Jeff Davis, who's in the group with me, started talking about how great Ariana Grande is. Because did you see her on the Grammys? When the Grammys happened, she did this awesome number where she was in her boudoir and it was really cute. And she sang my favorite things. So Jeff and I are going on and on about how great Ariana Grande is. And Ryan from the back of the van goes, it's not bad enough that the virus is, and I have to get on a plane again, but I have to listen to you two guys talk about fucking Ariana Grande the whole fucking ride.
I mean, honestly, that's a bad couple of days for him.
So by lunch we were done and I drove home and that was that. And then
and that's the last restaurant you've been to.
The last restaurant I went to was a day or two after that. We hadn't had the big order to stand down here by Garcetti yet. Jennifer and I went to Nate and Al's and had lunch.
Deli, yeah.
And I had a pastrami sandwich, which I haven't had in years. And we saw Courtney Cox and Lisa Kudrow there with Lisa Kudrow's dad and went over and said hi to them. And
good one.
So it was, that was the last time, really. Yeah. Then since then, no. But the other, on the other hand, and I'm sure you've done the same thing. I'm sure you've reached out to like everyone you've ever known. And
I talked to like 6 ex-boyfriends.
I saw that too. I knew it was true.
That is a complete indication that things are going downtown. Sometimes I forget that it's happening. You know, I mean, obviously I'm quarantined. My daughter, she's 13 and she's here. She's set up in a tent in her bedroom. Okay. She's got Disney Plus. I probably won't see her till August.
Right.
But it's really very surreal, isn't it?
It's extraordinary. I'm a social guy. On my podcast, when I do it live, I shake hands with everyone and talk to everyone.
I swear to God, I was going to say that. I have that written down here. There's no more shake, because you would shake hands with everybody before the show.
Yep.
Not even after the show. Well, maybe after, but before, you would go in and you would kind of announce yourself. You know who does that? Is like Jay Leno would always do that before the Tonight Show even starts. He'd come out in like a regular way. And that's what you always did.
Yeah.
Well, that might be over for good, because this.
That's what I mean. Until we can control this, and people don't relapse, and that where it's been proven that people don't relapse, and that some immunity gets built up in the body politic, I don't think that's going to happen again. And I'm not a super touchy feely creepy guy, but I do shake everyone's hand and take pictures with people, and
yeah.
I don't know that that'll be part of the gig anymore. And I mean, I don't feel sorry for myself. I feel concerned and worried that the response in this country is so piecemeal and haphazard because of the Republican Party is an evangelical white supremacist death cult. And they kind of want this to happen. And this is a dream come true.
I know. It's unbelievable. It's like, these are the people that are against abortion, but now they're ready to kill your grandma.
Yes. And they're using this as an excuse in a bunch of states to close down all the abortion clinics, which of course is heinous, because abortion is, imagine forcing someone to have go through with their pregnancy under these circumstances. I mean, that's how cruel they are.
Yeah,
so there's no limit to that. And that of course, the most upsetting part is the existential threat isn't so much the virus as that, the Republican Party doesn't seem to give one toss about the population. They haven't closed Florida yet. There are people on the beaches yesterday in Florida.
Yeah, and the governor's refusing. Yeah, and it's, now we're recording on Sunday the 29th. This is going to go up on the 31st on Tuesday. And by Tuesday, things could already be different. So it's hard to do an evergreen podcast during these times.
Fair enough.
There's really nothing else to talk. I mean, we can talk about anything. We can tell some stories, but it's impossible to not address what is going on. I've gone out shopping for my elderly friend, a couple of my elderly friends. But even so, I drop off a bag of groceries at their door. Now they're supposed to take those groceries and disinfect them as they bring them into the house. I mean, in other words, if you get into the minutia of what can be affected, the bag, the cereal box, the orange, inside the orange after you peel it, I've watched a couple of videos about disinfecting your home and exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And it seems impossible. I mean, you do the best you can, but I mean, what kind of measures are you taking to, sterilize?
Well, my understanding is that, after a few hours, even if something has been infected with it, for instance, a cereal box or a paper bag, it starts to break up, and then it's not a whole virus anymore. And so you're best to leave things you buy sitting for a while until the next day, maybe, unless they're perishable meat or whatever, then you have to stick it in the fridge. And then in general, wipe it off after that kind of thing.
I know, but right then, okay, so you just stick it in the fridge, boom, you just messed up, right? I mean,
right, you have to wipe the package off, or soap and water everything, really.
Yeah.
We bleach the hallway of our house where, in case we come in through the front door. Mm-hmm. I've taken Clorox wipes to all the doorknobs and everything, including my car doors. And
I didn't even think about car doors.
Well, we get in them and go out of them to go to the supermarket, which is like once a week affair or whatever. And I'm scared, senseless by that too, because how do you chase down every bloody germ of the virus. But the good part is, like you say, you're buying for your elderly neighbors. Our neighbors across the street, one of them has had a stroke. And so he's, you know, housebound. And we call them when we go to the store. She calls us when she goes to the store.
That's nice. You know, I've been wearing gloves when I leave the house, but I've been just wearing the one glove to save on gloves. You know what I mean? And then right. The one hand I like stick in my pocket, and then I just touch it with the one hand.
Right?
See?
I do that one too.
Okay.
You can also wash your gloves after you, while you're wearing them.
I didn't know that. I've been throwing them away.
You can wash them in soap and water very thoroughly, and then sort of, I mean, like, you know, if you're using like dish gloves, I think the little throwaway ones is best to probably throw them away. I don't know.
Now, my friend Kelly, she got a note under her door in her apartment building that said that somebody in her complex has, you know, the virus, and they're just letting her. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. I don't want that note under my door.
No.
Jesus.
Even picking up the note is frightening at that point.
Yeah. What about the mailbox?
Well, that's the thing. We kind of put everything in the, you know, sort of quarantine everything when it comes in the house.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're learning to have to be super zen and patient about everything.
I have a tiny bit of good news. Are you ready?
Yes, please.
I got new sheets. Yeah, I did. And they're from this company called Etitude. And have you heard of Clean Bamboo, by the way?
Mm-mm.
Clean Bamboo. It is the holy grail of fabric is what it is. Clean Bamboo. It's a revolutionary bamboo bedding technology. And it's not only good for you, but it's also good for the planet. And I'm telling you guys, these sheets, Etitude sheets, are super, super soft. Like, for instance, if you have, okay, let's say you have really good cotton sheets. They're like, let's say it's 1,300 cotton sheets, the thread count. That's huge, right? 1,300 cotton. Well, that's what these sheets are like. They're like the equivalent of 1,300 cotton thread count sheets, as it were.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, listen, they're really soft, you guys. And it's an extremely breathable fabric as well, which helps me because Greg Proops, I don't know about your wife, Jennifer, but I get what they call the night sweats. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Night sweats, hot flashes.
Oh, yes, yes.
All of a sudden, you're just sweating.
I've heard of them, yes.
Yeah, well, anyway, good sheets help that. No kidding, you guys. It will improve your quality of sleep. You guys, why not try Etitude? These amazing sheets, they have a 30-day risk-free trial. And if you're not fully satisfied, you can return the sheets for a full refund. And they even cover the shipping on returns. That's always nice. Etitude's luxury bedding and sleepwear and bath range are gentle on your skin and on our planet. Right now, you guys, you should order some Etitude sheets. They're soft as silk and breathable as linen, but at the price of cotton. You guys are going to love them. And when you support my sponsors, like you know, you guys are supporting me and Storyworthy. And right now, you guys, my listeners will receive 20% off your sheet set and free shipping. Just enter Story at checkout for 20% off your entire order, you guys. Again, etitude.com. Just enter the promo code Story at checkout, you guys. You'll get 20% off your entire order. That's the only way, you guys, enter the promo code Story. Okay, there, that's the good news because I have really nice sheets now and a beautiful duvet cover. And duvet covers are, a good one is hard to find. Am I right?
Yes, they are. Did they send you a whole set?
Yeah, they sent me a set of sheets and a duvet cover. And I'm telling you, it's like, first of all, the color brightens up my bedroom. It's just beautiful to look at. It's this color green, you see. It's almost like it's very light. This is like the bag that the sheets come in. And now I have this sensible bag. Anyway, you guys, it's nice to have a new sponsor in these times, and there's nothing more I can use than good sheets.
No kidding.
No kidding. Anyway, listen, Greg, tell me some more things. I want to hear. And so what are you and Jennifer doing during this quarantine? Like, how are you guys? Like, I've started a 1,000-piece puzzle, you know, I'm doing stuff I usually do on like Christmas break, as it were.
Right. Well, I've learned to speak Portuguese. I can play the oboe.
Oh, shit. Hey,
I restrung a tennis racket. No, I haven't accomplished any of those things. There's been a lot of relaxing. I have an album to edit, which I've been waiting on for ages and have no excuse for waiting now. We're going to make a podcast probably later today. We're still carrying on with the weekly podcast. The one we can't do anymore, of course, is the film club. We showed a film a couple of weeks ago. That was our last one.
Yeah.
Arrow. What did we show? We showed High and Low by Kurosawa. And Jennifer picked up the films. So that's kind of a bummer because, you know, showing pictures is something we really love doing. And it's not like it's a big gainful employment. It's just a labor of love.
Yeah. And you're so good at it. You're very good at commenting, as is Jennifer. You guys, your show, tell Jennifer I said this too, The Smartest Man in the World. It's such a well-done podcast. Jennifer seems to have take the lead in a lot of ways. I mean, she really, she's like the director. She knows what's going to come. She's very organized. There's never wasting any time. And every episode you've done, and you've done like what, 700?
I mean, oh my God, yeah.
800?
Well, one a week for almost 10 years, yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's where I am too. Now, I just completed my 600th episode. In fact, you were the one.
That's right.
You were the 600th guest. But that's because at one point I was doing two episodes a week, and you know how it goes with podcasting and stuff. But anyway, every one of your episodes is named just like a vowel. Like an episode will be called peppers or flowers or meat. Well, who is naming your episodes?
That was a terrible mistake I made at the beginning by letting Ryan, one of our producers, name the episodes. So he, unless I direct him otherwise, he just plucks something out of the episode and gives it the name. And it's always, a plural vowel of some kind.
I think it's funny.
I do too. So that's why I haven't stopped it, because it's sometimes it's a little too on the nose to go, this one's about this.
Yeah.
After a giant shooting earlier this year, we made the episode Call Mitch McConnell and gave out his phone number was the name of the episode. And then when we did one at the NAACP, I think I've said, we're calling this one the NAACP. And of course, the Negro League ones, I say, this is the Negro League Hall of Induction. I don't want it to be called like a baseballs or, hot dogs or something. I want people to know what the episode's about. And, that I thought was funny because it was so random and it fell in line with the randomness of the show, which was always feeling like we're trying to free fall and walk backwards. But you're right. Jennifer is well organized and directs the show in so much as the content's always been driven by her, because we always talk about what the show was going to be before I did it. And then I would go on and freestyle it with my newspapers and my, facts and figures and boring preachy stuff. And now that we do it together, we just do the same thing, but sit next to each other.
And do you both have your own laptop in front of you or not?
She usually has all of her phone and her pad and all of her stuff. And then I have the laptop because I'm DJing too. So when we play music and stuff,
you play a lot of music. Yeah.
Yeah. Like last week we had, McCoy Tyner swirled off through the heavens, the jazz pianist, and we're jazz fans. And he was in his 80s and he'd been around a long time and he passed away. And famously he worked with John Coltrane in for jazz fans, a really famous quartet in the 60s was him and Coltrane, Elvin Jones, and I'm forgetting the fourth because my brain is atrophied. But in any case, that's where he started to get famous. And then after John Coltrane passed away, he worked with both Alice, John's wife, and Robbie, his son. And Jennifer and I saw Robbie play with Chick Corea a couple years ago in New York, the Blue Note.
Wow.
And so I always feel like, too, African-American artists don't get to play. So we're always trying to amplify that. And Manu Dibango swirled off into the heavens this week. He was from Cameroon, and he had a song in the early 70s called Soul Makossa, which has been sampled by everybody. Beyonce did it, and Will Smith and whatnot. And it's a chant with saxophones. It's very jazzy and funky. And it goes, Mama Say, Mama Sa, Mama Sa Kosa. And
that just repeats itself, a chant?
Like, yeah, it's really the jam, and I think you'd like it. Yeah. Anyways, we played it at the beginning of the show and we were just talking about him. And then of course he passed away right after that, which I've done to several celebrities. I gave a giant paean to Elizabeth Taylor, literally the week she died.
Oh God, really?
I was talking about how much I loved Elizabeth Taylor. And I just watched Cleopatra again. And I was doing all of her lines from, how dare you burn down the library? You know, like the Elizabeth Taylor. And she's sort of has 10,000 outfits in the movie, and it's really a wild over the top.
The story about that being made is fascinating, how it was the most expensive film to ever be made.
By comparing what dollar value is worth.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, there were so many holdups, and it mostly was because of Elizabeth Taylor, right? Uh-huh. And so yes. What is that story about that? What is that backstory on Cleopatra?
Well, she was not with Richard Burton at the beginning of the film, and by the end of the film, they were together. And Mankiewicz was trying to make this giant epic. And this is sort of at the end of when they were making all the giant. There's a couple Bible ones that are after it. But all the real sword and sandal stuff is from the 50s. You know, Ben-Hur and The Robe and all those movies. Ten Commandments. All of which are fantastic because they're so campy. And that fake Hollywood Judeo-Christian thing in them. Like at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, Cecil B. DeMille comes out and goes, "This is a story about the Bible." And you're like, oh, it's a story of how white people changed the Bible into a story of white people. Now I invite you to the idea of having Charlton Heston play one of the great Jewish prophets of all time delights me beyond measure. I can't think of anything more delightful. So in Cleopatra, yeah, it just went on and on and on forever. They spent a bajillion dollars, and the movie's 3 hours long with an intermission, and it just died on its ass. But her greatest skill was jacking her price up so high, she was never underpaid. You never see a Liz Taylor movie where she got $3 and she's in a horror film. You know what I mean? Almost every other actor, yeah. Ray Milland, anyone you can think of Betty Davis, they end up being in kind of crappier little productions. Because no one wants to work, you know, whatever. That's how your career goes. Elizabeth Taylor was never in anything she didn't get overpaid for. I mean, she knew how to beat them down. And for that, I love her. And also, of course, she was fabulous about AIDS the moment it started to happen. She was on their side. She raised zillions of dollars for AIDS charities. She always had everyone's back, Rock Hudson and everybody. Because a lot of people didn't even know there was AIDS until Rock Hudson got it.
Yeah. And, you were living, of course, in San Francisco in the 80s. So you did see an epidemic pass through, all those thousands of people dying in San Francisco. And you were right there. And a lot of people didn't have information back then either in terms of how to catch it. And remember, people were afraid to go to the dentist. And there was all this, you know, so much misinformation.
Oh, it was terrible.
Are you seeing parallels now?
Very much so. And the parallel is, and this is not going to be as uplifting as I want it to be, the Republican government at the time failed to act and refused to believe it existed because it was homosexuals. And the government is doing the same thing now because they detest the underclass and they're wildly racist and sexist. And most of the people on the front line of this, the people who work in supermarkets, the people who deliver food, the people who are healthcare professionals, are women and the underclass, which means that there may not be white. And for them, this is business as usual during a plague. Instead of springing into action, getting ahead of the curve, and making everything happen 2 months ago when they saw the first case, he sat on his hands. And then now they want to dip into the budget and, you know, award themselves a bunch of money and then celebrate themselves home. You watch the press conferences and they're not even standing apart from one another.
No,
they're
I know.
Standing right next to each other.
So
I won't let anyone come near me at the supermarket. I hissed at a guy the other day because he started to come toward Jennifer at the checkout. And I went, and he backed up and went, "I'm sorry." And it's like, so when you see the kind of laissez-faire attitude they're taking, it's the same laissez-faire attitude that Ronald Reagan had. He laughed about it. His administration ignored it. The first action anyone took on it was basically after Reagan was out and Magic Johnson declared he had HIV. All of a sudden, Herbert Walker was like, "Hey, this is an issue."
Yeah.
And then
he gave a bunch of money to Africa as well, right? Reagan.
And W gave a bunch of money. Of all the things W did, and I hated him more than life itself till this president, the one thing W did was give Africa a wild amount of money to combat AIDS.
Yeah.
So that was the one beautiful thing he did. So that's the parallel, I'd say.
Interesting.
The thing is, in San Francisco, it was so awful. Jennifer worked in the Castro then, and that's a heavily, you know, the gay neighborhood. It's where Harvey Milk's...
What was she doing down there? Was she like in a restaurant or a theater? Or?
A video store then. And you just would watch whole communities crumble and everything. It was really It was really savage.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's the part that I don't dig. The thing about this one is, it's even more, the thing that people were afraid of with AIDS when they were misunderstood it at the beginning was it was thought you could get it by commingling breath, droplets, tears, things like that. And this virus actually is transmitted that way.
Yeah.
So we've reached the super virus stage where literally standing next to someone and breathing in their air can be potentially lethal. We have to jump ahead and be patient. Stay confined. If it takes 6 months, it takes 6 months.
Yeah.
And not jump into this this Republican magical thinking nonsense of we're open for business and goddamn it, no one's going to tell me what to do and all that, you know.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
There's so many things I want to talk to you about. The virus thing, you know, being quarantined, I feel like I'm doing everything I can, except I'm not wiping down my groceries, I guess. I mean, I guess there are some things I could be doing better, but I guess at the other end of it, I think like, look, if it's meant to get me, I guess it's going to get me. I don't know. I mean, I'm not being stupid. I'm not shaking hands. I'm not, you know, I'm doing everything I can. But if I think too much about it, I can kind of freak myself out. So let me ask you about something else.
Yes, please. That's the thing.
So you and Jennifer do your show, The Smartest Man in the World. And we've talked about before that you're not the only smartest person. Your wife is so, so smart. So it's
she's way smarter than I am.
The smartest people in the world. But my question is, you're both online all the time. And it's like your show is really like teaching people. I feel like you're educating people all the time. Like I learned from your show about jazz artists, about all sorts of things I otherwise wouldn't know. And I guess I'm just wondering, like, so obviously you pre-produce the show in some ways, but are you trying to learn new things all the time? Or are you like, you're just, okay, no, I do jazz, I do movies, I do old entertainers.
We are trying to educate ourselves all the time. Jennifer's a voracious reader and she follows the news more than anyone I've ever met. And, she also reads all the international publications, which I think a lot of Americans don't do.
Right.
The BBC, the French papers, which you can read in English. She follows a bunch of correspondents who are with papers all around the world. So you're getting a little bit more perspective. I think it helps the show be more rounded.
Yeah.
And the people who get upset with the show are generally, and this is going to sound like sour, well, I won't say it. There's a lot of people who get upset with us because we promote women a lot. And there's so much misogyny and racism that if the show's all about Black women and how we feel their voice should be made more present in the national dialogue, I get complaints from male listeners who are like, I don't like the show anymore. It used to be really good. And it's like, well, I know why you're saying this because I'm not any different than I was. I still have the same sense of humor.
Yeah.
You don't like content to not be about the things you want it to be about. To which I respond, go listen to any guy's podcast. There's a million of them. And they talk about stupid shit and the stupid shit guys like and the awesome sexism of guys. Even at this late date when we're all quarantined and need to be enlightened, men persist in being lazy, ignorant, stupid, and willfully obnoxious to everyone around them. For instance, the other day, at the supermarket, guys were driving in and out of the car park so fast that they could have killed people. And you're like, one, you're in quarantine, so where are you going?
Yeah, what was that all about? What was that about?
I know, I don't know. And then we were walking down the street the other day having a little walk, and a SUV drove by going the speed of Halley's Comet, and music blaring, windows open, and the two guys inside had masks on, and they almost hit someone in the crosswalk. And you're like, so could you be a bigger dickhead during this?
Yeah, so they're just all confused. Their priorities are all over the place.
So I'm never failed to be amazed and astounded, Christine, by that. My wife is an intelligent person. She has a lot to say. She's sensitive and more than anything, honest. And I think that's what really drives guys. I know it drives me crazy because she's honest with me and I don't want to hear it. So I can only imagine how listeners respond.
I, I love this idea of reading foreign newspapers. And I do it when I travel. When I've been overseas, I'll look at the paper. But it's never occurred to me to do that now. And boy, you really do get a different perspective because, you know, if you read the paper in Paris today, I'm going to do that. I'm going to look something up. That's fairly interesting. Like if right. you read the front page in Paris today, they would be saying that, well, what we're all saying is that the U.S. has more cases of the COVID-19 virus than anyone in the world. Yep. And then what would they say about our president? Like, what do you know what France is saying about our president?
Well, I think they can't believe how negligent he is. For instance, his tweet this morning was about how great the ratings are of his daily briefings. He actually tweeted that this morning, whereas Macron shut the country down and has given everyone money. And there are police patrols on the streets, and you're not even allowed to go drive in a car with another person. Jennifer and I could not drive to the supermarket together in a car together because that's how strict the rules are. And therefore, they're really trying. And their health minister yesterday said it's not over for them. You know, they're taking it seriously. And Britain didn't. You know, they elected that fascist Boris Johnson, who was responsible for Brexit, which was a terrible right. you know, right-wing coup, basically, you know.
Can you believe he has it?
I do, because he spent the last month shaking hands and slapping with people to prove that it wasn't that communicable and that yeah. we were all in panic over it. Yeah. The thing that I don't think is true is 45 says he tested for it, and I don't believe that at all, because I don't believe anything he says. What was the joke? He would lie about the time for practice, like, He's pathological and he cannot tell the truth. Yes. And he's standing next to the two doctors who are supposed to be the biggest experts right next to them on the dais every day, which yes. is endangering all of them. And one of Pence's staff has it and is in quarantine. Rand Paul has it and is in quarantine. They've touched all these people. They've been around all these people. So him saying, oh, yeah, I have a test and I can tell you.
How did Amy Klobuchar?
He wouldn't tell us if he did have it because he's that duplicitous. He will, if he gets it and dies of it, he will just die and we'll never know why he died because he won't tell.
I won't care. I just want him.
No, me neither. So, yeah, there's that. She brings
so
that perspective.
When you hear all these random people that have it, you know, like
yeah.
Klobuchar's husband, Jackson right. Brown, yeah. you know, but I think it's also because they're getting tested. Other people could have had it or do have it, but they're not getting tested. So we don't know.
That's the thing. And so I feel like the news that we're getting, the numbers that we're seeing, the things that we hear are week to 2 weeks old because we're so far behind testing and actually knowing the extent of it. That's why it's imperative to do what, thank God we've got Garcetti here and Gavin Newsom because they take
Gavin Newsom. And I'm also so impressed with Cuomo in New York. I yeah. see either of these guys speak and I think like, why isn't either of these guys president? I mean, there seems so many other capable people at all.
Right. And they don't lie. They don't sugar.
Yeah. Now I read that in Russia where there's 145 million people, there's only 1500 people with the virus. Hasn't hit Russia or what?
They will never tell us the truth because Putin's regime is based on years ago. You may remember, some 20 years ago when he first took control, they had a submarine go down, a Russian submarine. And they tried to save the crew and they weren't able to do it. And by the time they let the Norwegians come in and try to save the crew, which the Norwegians were able to go down and get the submarine, everyone had died. And Putin was on vacation that weekend in Sochi where they had the Olympics.
Yeah.
And he totally trumped it. He was like, don't worry about it and everything will be okay. And of course, they all died. And the world didn't know that he'd lied about it for weeks, that they'd actually let an entire crew of Russian submariners die.
I remember that vaguely. Was it like 23 or was it?
It was about 18, 19 years ago.
Yeah, but how many people were on the submarine?
Oh, yeah. It was some 25 members yeah. of the crew, something like that. But they simply lied about it, yes. just like they lie about everything. You may remember 2 years ago when he was reelected again, before he made himself president for life or whatever.
I love when he's reelected. That's hilarious.
Yeah, he was reelected. And then he cried on TV because he was so grateful for being reelected by the people. And so the idea that the Chinese or the Russians are ever going to tell us the truth yeah. is beyond comprehension. So he's simply lying about it. And it's really, to be honest, it's what 45 wishes he could do. It's what he tried to do for the first 2 months. Yeah. Remember, there was, it's like a miracle, it's just going to go away. It's like a miracle, he said. Right. Then the other one was, it's just going to wash away. People don't like when I say it, but it's going to wash away. And then he actually said at one point, there's only 15 cases, soon it'll be zero. Yeah.
And this weekend it'll be zero. He said 15 and this weekend it'll be zero.
So he would love to play it the way Putin plays it, which is to simply say there's no cases and everything's fine. But the cat got out of the bag and, you know, he only cares about one thing, and that's himself. And so when he sees the country's economy failing, and he knows that no president wins re-election when the economy tanks, you can ask Herbert Hoover, that this is it, you know. He should have been removed, of course, by the impeachment, because he's done something impeachable every day of his presidency.
Well, the difference is there are a lot of really intelligent people that are speaking up, like we said, you know, like the governors are doing a great job. A lot of the mayors are doing a better job. There does seem to be some leadership in those areas. And then when Trump comes on the screen, it's like everybody behind him, everybody's like looking the same way. Like, what's happening? Like, it's so funny how we're all in on it. And there's just this one dumb guy. Mm-hmm. And we can't get him out. It just seems bizarre.
Well, he could be gotten out. There's a thousand ways to do this. The 25th Amendment provides several ways out. And one of the ways is if the vice president feels that the president's incapacitated, he can actually move that it be invoked that he is no longer mentally fit enough to be.
Well,
we've tested it a bunch of times.
But Pence isn't mentally fit either.
No, and that's what's happening. And also, of course, the Senate had their chance to remove him before this crisis happened, and they didn't. They failed to do that because they're corrupt and utterly venal and evil. And so they could reconvene and have a quick impeachment, and that could be done in a week's time. And it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, we impeached Bill Clinton, and I watched it on TV, and it went on for weeks, and then they finally voted and they voted it down. There was a real argument at the end of Reagan's second term for him being completely mentally unfit. He seemed to not be able to recall anything. His mental capacity was diminished.
Yeah.
Eisenhower had 2 heart attacks when he was president. And we don't know who was running the country during the times when he was completely out. Woodrow Wilson was so ill in his second term that his wife, Judith, basically ran the country with the cabinet from behind closed doors. So it's not like we haven't faced this before.
Yeah.
Because he is completely incapacitated, as far as I can see, 45. He's slurry. He's druggy. He's walking like a wounded bison. He slumps like this.
He sniffs.
He can't speak.
His sniffing is hilarious. He's constantly like,
oh.
Such an Adderall freak, and it's so obvious. Everybody knows. Hey, listen, we're going to wrap it up in a second, but you know, this episode, talking about the quarantine, have you found any entertainment? You know, that, I mean, like, I've seen some of these home concerts. Like, did you see Graham Nash playing Our House?
Oh, that was so cute. Yes. That was really lovely.
I love that.
We watched a movie the other night. Jennifer's always on top of everything. We watched a picture on Netflix called Crip Camp, which was about disabled people and their fight to get public access to everything and have that. It was put into law by the Nixon administration.
Hmm.
The Ford administration didn't act on it, and the Carter administration hadn't acted on it. So it follows the story of these kids from the time they were in camp together when they were like teens. And then they all became activists, and several of the leading lights camped out in Washington, D.C. until the head of HEW enacted the law that got what you see now, which is ramps everywhere and handicap access to everything.
Oh, wow.
They were literally denied this until they crawled up the steps of the Capitol and embarrassed everyone to death. And it's called Crip Camp, and it's a fabulous movie, as in like Crip, they call themselves Crips, right? C-R-I-P. They're cripples, so they could call themselves cripples.
Okay.
And there's 40 million Americans with disabilities, which is a great deal. That's a huge minority.
A lot of people, sure.
And so that was a really infuriating movie and completely uplifting and delightful. You see people with quadriplegics, paraplegics, people with Downs, people with cerebral palsy, blind people, every type of disability, every type of race, every type of gender, every type of sexual orientation. It's a beautiful movie, and it'll, you know, we cried and cried, but it's also lovely because a lot of them are still alive and a lot of them are still at the front lines of being disability advocates. And it's a really nice time to see a picture where people change things. I really hate, and I have friends who do it, that nihilistic white guy blow everything up mentality, because it's nauseating. Nothing matters, man. He's going to win again. And like, you don't know that, one. And two, by saying this, you're being absolutely standing in the way of any change. You know what I mean? Either be part of what's going to happen next or bug off, because I don't really.
I hear what you're saying, except that why does anybody think that this election isn't going to be hacked the exact same way it was 4 years ago? Like, why that's going to happen again? You don't, I mean, I'm of course I'll vote for the Democrat, but I'm just saying, like, don't you think it's kind of already a done deal?
No, I don't. Okay. I think that this has changed it. I think that
that's true. Now with this, that's true. With this virus, things are a different.
I mean, look how many people were voting in the primaries and look how many people voted in 2018. We've seen excess, you know, more participation than ever. And because this is such a life and death thing, the more people that vote, the less old fascist white guys win elections. That's just empirically proven. And the more women are in office, the better things become for everyone, because women have a sense of governance and stewardship, responsibility and empathy, which are utterly lacking in men who are white.
I agree. No, I agree. And I feel like they had their chance. They blew it. Now give women a chance, for Christ's sakes. I mean, what's the hold up?
I think the voting's going to be crazy.
It doesn't change the Electoral College. I mean,
no, it doesn't.
The numbers are the numbers. And so unless we move, I feel like unless we transplant ourselves to states where we can vote, like, we got to go to Wyoming. We got to live in fucking Oklahoma. I don't know what we have to do. We got to move. I mean,
well, there's that. There's also, like, you know, how he's been terrible about Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Michigan is a swing state for him, and he's really stepping on his own thing there by hacking on her during this.
I know. I'm just worried about, you know, the Electoral College, because of course by popular vote Democrats are going to win, but by Electoral College,
I think if you vote enough, you overwhelm them. And I think that this is the election where that happens.
I hope you're right.
I'm wrong about everything, Christine, but I refuse to cave in. I believe it's going to be along the lines of Clinton's second win when he beat Dole, because he ended up with like 300 electoral votes, and Dole carried a lot of Dixie and the Bible Belt and the Rust Belt.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be along those lines. I think the one thing that you can't do is move people that aren't movable. The Trumpkins are going to be Trumpkins, and they don't care if everyone dies on Earth. They're still going to be Trumpkins. But the people who aren't Trumpkins can't be moved either. Nothing he could do at this point would make me even consider remotely voting for him. And I think that that's the majority of people. And he's also cratering now with a lot of the white women that went his way last time, I think. A lot of them are seeing that it wasn't a good idea, and that their internal misogyny or whatever it was, this need to protect themselves, whatever reason that white women voted for him and didn't vote for Hillary.
I think the Democrats will easily win Pennsylvania and some of the other swing states where it was very close. I don't think that'll be a problem.
Yeah.
This time, I hope so. Okay, one more thing before we wrap it up. What do you plan as a, you know, obviously as an artistic person, and especially you, particularly Greg, who, you know, your whole thing is live performing. What are you going to do? Like I was saying, Graham Nash played Our House, and then Chris Martin, he was on, you know, he did something from his living room. And of course you saw Neil Diamond, I'm sure, singing his Wash Your Hands song. So what are you going to do, Greg? What are we going to, I mean, your podcast, yes, but we might need to see like a whole Greg Proops quarantine tips, something.
Well, certainly the podcast. And I did a show that Steve Hochstetter does last night that was like a live comedy club.
Oh, good.
That was really fun. And I didn't know if it would work, and it did. There was a big flurry. And then you asked me to do this, and Richard Marx asked me to do his, and Ben Glebe asked me to do Hochstetter's show. So I'm getting a little busier, so I intend on doing that. I'm going to edit the album eventually in the next week or so, and then we'll put that out.
What's the name of that?
Jennifer named it because it's so funny. The Punchline in San Francisco has been, you know, a club that I've played at since I was in my 20s. I am now 86. And it was supposed to close because it got bought by Google or something. And I was booked to play there. This was July. And right before I was going to play the club, I determined, well, Jennifer said, let's make an album there. And you can make the album about the club in San Francisco and all that and tell stories.
Yeah.
So we arranged to do that. Ryan, our producer, came up with us. And right the week before I played, the club was saved. So the general manager of Live Nation called me and said, we're closing the club. I don't think you're going to have a gig. You won't be able to play there New Year's, but we'll find you something else. And I'm like, okay. Then they saved the club. So the weekend we recorded, the air conditioning in the club broke down. So that it was boiling hot inside in San Francisco. They had to leave the doors open while we were recording. The bathroom there is incredibly small and awful. The dressing room has no sink. And I just went, it was supposed to be this elegy for this club about how much I loved it. And it's turned into me bitching about how it got saved. And so I improvised four sets. And then, of course, of politics and everything else, too. There's a lot of... it's four improvised sets, and that's what I'm in the process of editing.
But what's it called then? What's the name?
So we kept tossing around different titles, and Jennifer finally said, why not call it Elegy for a Club That's Still Open?
That's a good step. That's a good
story. So I think we're going to call it that. I made an album there 2 years ago.
Yeah, The Resistance. That's what I was
saying. The Resistance, yeah. Right. If you bought the album, on the label of the album, the physical vinyl album, I had the audience pretend they were asleep, and I took a picture of them from the stage. So there's a picture of everyone in the audience.
That's asleep. So funny.
Which because I used to love Tom Lehrer. I don't know if you know who Tom Lehrer is. He's a musical comedian from the 50s and 60s. And he had been a mathematics professor at Harvard. He lives in Santa Cruz. And his albums are snide and scathing, very, very funny in song. And then he does patter in between. And some of the patters like, a friend of mine graduated from medical school. He specializes in diseases of the very rich. And a friend of mine studied animal husbandry until they caught him at it.
He sounds like Zach Galifianakis, you know?
Right? It was deconstructed before there was deconstructed. There was an art film that came out in the early 60s called Oedipus Rex, which was the Oedipus Rex story. And he said it didn't do very well at the box office. And I determined that the reason why Oedipus Rex failed at the box office was because it didn't have a catchy theme tune. And so he wrote the theme to Oedipus Rex, which is this bouncy, yeah. In any case, his album covers were always him or him playing whatnot. And it would say an evening, and then the word inserted wasted with Tom Lehrer. And then on the back of every album, bad reviews. I loved him so much for doing that. Everyone else always puts on their poster, fabulous, amazing.
Of course.
Years ago in England, I remember one comedian I knew put magic on her poster. Magic. I found a bunch of my posters, because I've been cleaning my garage all week.
Yeah.
From England when I toured there in the 90s. And all of my posters say, some new jokes.
Because
people would put all new, you know, all new show. And then snide, overconfident, and overrated.
Oh, that's so funny.
All my bad reviews I would put on the posters. And I remember my agent in England at the time would get mad at me and go, you're only going to drive people away. And I'm like, it's a joke, Vivian.
That's the
idea.
Like,
the smartest man in the world was a joke, and no one's ever gotten it. That I don't think I'm the smartest man in the world. It was supposed to be funny. So Tom Lehrer used to put all that on. My favorite one on any Tom Lehrer album is More Desperate Than Amusing. And so that's why I thought it would be funny to have them.
You know the comedian Laura Keitlinger?
Of course, very well.
Yeah. One time I asked her if she wanted to play Story Smash, my game show. And she goes, I'm not that hungry. And now I just want her so bad.
just
well, I'm looking forward to getting back to obviously normal life, live performing. You know, as you've had to cancel all your gigs, Story Smash, of course, is canceled. It's just we're in unprecedented times, and it's nice to have you still around. You know, via the podcast and you're doing your album, getting that ready for us, and so it's just a delight to hear your voice, Greg Proops.
Thank you, Christine Blackburn, and thank you for having me on. When I see you again, I hope it's at a live show of Story Worthy.
Boy, me too, man. I'm telling you. Listen, folks, I got to wrap it up, but I want to thank you so much for tuning in today, talking about quarantining with Greg Proops. And I want you to find Greg over there on Twitter, at Greg Proops, and you can also find him at his website, gregproops.com. Find me over there on your social media at StoryWorthy, and then, of course, at StoryWorthyPodcast.com. And I want to thank the sponsor on the show today, Etitude. Again, you guys, it's beautiful bedding made from 100% clean bamboo, and I really think you will love it. So check them out at Etitude.com and use the promo code STORY for 20% off and free shipping. Hooray! And remember, you guys, when you support my sponsors, you're supporting me and my daughter, Alabama. Thank you. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented Greg Proops, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.